Welcome, everyone, to the All-Star Break edition of the NBA Podcast. Got a great episode for you today, including a vicious Brian Colangelo rant from yours truly. We'll also give some award updates, and we will make some predictions for the trade deadline, which is next Thursday. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind everyone to follow us on Twitter, at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles as well, so be sure to give us a follow. You can find us this year on iTunes, so be sure to check us out there. We'd love it if you subscribed, downloaded, left us some feedback. We'd love any good or bad. And then you can find us this year also on FanRag Sports. So check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Zach Harper, formerly of CBS Sports, is with us for the end of the season, so be sure to check all the FanRag content out. We've had some good stuff heading into the trade deadline. With all of that said, I'm joined as always today by both Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
It's going well, Brian.
It's good. It's a beautiful day in Texas today. I feel like I should be out frolicking, but...
Don't worry, Sarah. Global warming is happening. It's not a Chinese hoax. So, yeah, you're going to have
not
plenty
here.
More.
It's gray and snowy. So thank you, Sarah.
No there problem. You go. Well, in Chicago, it's likewise like 60 degrees in the middle of February. So, you know, yeah. Definitely not worried about global warming at all. Totally normal. all right. So we had an emergency podcast Tuesday, Morten and I did, discussing the blockbuster Serge Ibaka trade. We also touched on Kevin Love's injury and Yusuf Nurkic and the Mason Plumlee swapping from Denver to Portland. So, Sarah, before we move on to my Colangelo rant, I wanted to give you a chance to give your thoughts on any of those three topics.
Okay. Well, the Nurkic Plumlee trade, you know, it's not really a trade that moves the needle a lot for either team as we speak. Could be the start of something good for either one, depending on subsequent moves. But I don't mind it. I think it's a decent move for both teams. The main thing that strikes me is it's a great opportunity for Nurkic, who, you know, coming from the situation he was in, obviously he and Jokic unfortunately didn't work out on the floor together very well. And Jokic has pretty clearly emerged as the guy that Denver's going to go with. So, you know, to be in the position that he was in, you know, kind of frustrated not getting minutes to, you know, there's not a lot of competition, you know, with Azili being out all year. I mean, he has a chance to be the guy, the big, in Portland. So I'm interested to see what he does with that. Obviously, he's got some work to do defensively and whatnot, but he's a skilled player. So that's exciting. And then Plumlee, you know, he's athletic. He's a good role man. So, you know, theoretically, you could even pair him sometimes with Jokic, because Jokic is so good at the elbows and he can step out further. So it's not a bad move for either team. The Ibaka trade, I think you guys, I'm sure you guys pointed out, you guys have talked a lot about that. You wanted that to happen. And yeah, I mean, it kind of needed to happen, I think, especially with the East somewhat opening up a little bit with the Kevin Love news. I mean, it's go for it, you know, it's strike now type of thing. So it's good for Toronto. They were really falling, and hopefully, you know, they can kind of turn it back around a little bit and we can see a more interesting East now.
It sounds like you're about where we were with both the Plumlee Nurkic deal and the Ibaka trade. Both Morten and I were pretty high on, obviously, as we've been clamoring for Ibaka trade for months now, we were high on that. But also, we're big fans of both sides of the Plumlee Nurkic swap as well. We definitely see the upside there. Morten, any final thoughts about what Sarah had, or should we move on to me just lighting a fire under Brian Colangelo?
Oh, I want to hear your rant, but I can never disagree with Sarah, really, because she just nailed it. I completely agree. I especially like the fact that the point, Sarah, that you made with Plumlee as a role man, because I made a different argument that he would be good as a low block passer instead. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Him having the ability to roll with Jokic outside, who can shoot the three, would actually be an interesting dynamic. And with Jokic also being a wonderful passer and probably one of the best passers in the year to come, regardless of position, really, we could see our fair share of lobs between the two if, you know, they get to share minutes, which is still a big question mark. But
yeah, we'll won't see. Be a lot, I wouldn't think. But I mean, you can do it, I think. They could run like that 4-5 pick and roll that the Spurs have experimented with a little bit this year, which I love. I'd love to see more of. I think it would be effective for them as well.
Yeah, and right now it's looking like, I mean, they're the eighth seed right now, so they could play Golden State in the first round. Having all that size, I mean, you know, Golden State is still probably going to plow them in five games, but it might be a little bit more difficult than Golden State would like. So, they played Monday when that trade went down, and Jokic had a triple-double, and our boy Juan Hernan Gomez went off for like 30 points, close to 30 points, so... That could be a fun first round series. I'm suddenly excited about a Golden State Denver playoff matchup. All right, guys, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. You had to know this was coming because the Sixers, after having a great January and restoring hope to the franchise, they have turned back into a goddamn clown show in February. We're going to hit. I mean, there are three huge strikes against Brian Colangelo in the last 3 weeks. So I'm going to go over those, and then I want you guys to talk me down from the ledge a little bit. Okay. So obviously the big one, Jahlil Okafor gets held out Saturday before the All-Star break and Monday before the All-Star break. After Saturday, that was against the Heat, Brett Brown came out to the media and said, you know, trade discussions are heating up. We held him out for that reason. If you don't see him Monday against Charlotte, that's why. He didn't come to Charlotte. He like did not board the plane to Charlotte. So it, you know, all these reports were leaking out like it's going to happen today. It didn't happen. He then boards the plane, plays with the team against the Celtics on Wednesday, and is still on the team as of Friday, heading into the All-Star break. The Ringer's Kevin O'Connor reported that, you know, he talked to league sources and they suggested basically Brian Colangelo was trying to drive up Okafor's value by holding him out and making it seem like, all right, we're really going to trade him today. Get your best offers in. And obviously no one bought it because it's a third grade move from a GM. Like, you know, I was emailing with some Sixers people that whole weekend and I'm like, guys, these reports have been out for a week. Why hasn't the move happened? This is starting to feel like it's more posturing than anything else, which it obviously then turned out to be. So that was strike one. Strike two, the day of the day that they held Okafor out, the day that these supposed trade talks were heating up, Derek Bodner, a longtime Sixers reporter, who was starting his own Patreon, by the way, if you follow the Sixers, go support him on Patreon because he's the best Sixers writer in town. He broke the news that Joel Embiid had a slight meniscus tear as well as the bone bruise that he's been nursing for the last couple weeks. After that report, Colangelo came out to the media, said it's, you know, he has this tear. We did an MRI 3 weeks ago. We found it. It could have been pre-existing before the bone bruise. Didn't explain why they let him play in Houston or against Houston that next week with the bone bruise and the meniscus tear. The bone bruise had a timetable of 2 to 3 weeks to recover from. Didn't explain why that happened. But Embiid is out. You know, he's missed, I think, 14 of the last 15 games. He's not playing in the Rising Stars Challenge or the Skills Challenge and All-Star Weekend. So that was strike two. And now there's a report out that Ben Simmons, Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer reported Thursday that Ben Simmons' foot may not be fully healed yet, even though the Sixers leaked basically last month that it was fully healed. Chris Haynes of ESPN said he might make his debut soon after the All-Star break. The Sixers sent out a statement yesterday that basically said, we're putting his long-term health first. He's getting an MRI, I believe, next Thursday, the day of the trade deadline. That will probably determine his fate for the rest of the year. But at this point, it sounds like Ben Simmons more likely than not will not play this year and will miss his entire rookie season. So, here's my thought. If Brian Colangelo, I know, like, you have to sell tickets And it's a lot easier to sell tickets when there's the promise in March of like, hey, you might see Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Like, come, you know, come to this late season game that's otherwise meaningless because we're just headed toward the lottery again. I get that. But at the same time, Sam Hinkie was just fired for, in part, for being shifty and dishonest with the media about, you know, injury timetables and just not being available to talk about, you know, things with the franchise. I don't understand why Colangelo, you know, he went on this radio tour the week before the Embiid news came out, and he was talking about, you know, it's just a bone bruise, it's no big deal. He did not at any point mention the meniscus tear at all. That seems like a pretty big detail to leave out. So, again, I get the Sixers need to sell tickets, but this, like, weird policy of Donald Trumpian dishonesty where you're just kind of like fudging the facts or not including all of the information you need to, it really does not seem to be a smart strategy long term in terms of keeping your fans invested in the franchise. Because how do we know what you're, you know, how do we know what to believe and that you're being upfront with everything, you know, that's coming out? So here's the question I want to pose to you two. First, what reason do Sixers fans have to trust Brian Colangelo heading into the trade deadline?
You want to go, Mort?
Well, oh, man.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot, obviously. I think you kind of nailed it with your point about the shiftiness, that you've got to be shifty, but there's a limit to it. And I think as I think as Sixers fans got to ask themselves, does the means justify the ends? And if somehow Colangelo is successful in putting all these schemes up, and it somehow turns into a fantastic trade for him, especially with jerking Okafor around, whatever, then I suppose you could be satisfied with that. But I mean, my team has Gar Foreman,
right?
And I know that if you are repetitive in your pattern and you are a compulsive liar who has no respect for fans, media, whatever, then you're, to quote South Park, then you're going to have a bad time. And you're going to have a really bad time because you're going to lose the trust of the fans. You're going to lose the trust of opposing GMs. You're going to have a bad rep in the press. It's just not worth it in the long run. So while Colangelo may be able to cash in something now, you have to look at the long-term view and see what kind of consequences could his actions lead to. And if I'm a Sixers fan, I'm not really loving playing that idea or playing that rollout, because that sounds like a bad game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I find it hard to disagree with anything you said. So Sarah, I want to throw this question at you, because Brian Geltzeiler, Hoops critic on Twitter, a long, long enemy of process Sixers fans, because he was a noted critic of Sam Hinkie. He's the one who published that profile last fall about Joel Embiid with the Shirley Temples, all that good stuff. He made the point on Twitter recently, it's hypocritical to attack Colangelo for this shiftiness and for treating players like assets like he did with Okafor if you also supported Hinkie. Do you agree with that?
Oh, man. No, because Hinkie, he had a plan, and I don't, you know, yeah, he treated players like assets, but I feel like he was pretty clear about what he was doing. I don't think, you know, at least fans, either they agreed with it or they didn't. But I think on some level they understood what he was trying to do. And there wasn't all of this, like, misinformation coming out. And I was going to, you know, to piggyback on what Morton said, it's, you know, obviously as a Spurs fan, our organization plays a lot of stuff close to the vest. So, and we, as fans, we respect that. So I want to allow for that, but, you know, I they can't be breaking any rules, I'm assuming, or else they would have gotten in trouble. But I feel like they're blurring a line with the Sixers are with this, you know, they've come out how many times and said Ben Simmons will play this year.
Yeah. Right.
And, yeah. You know, and then there's this back and forth, which okay, apparently they don't know, so maybe just don't come out and say that, you right, know, until exactly. you're sure he's coming on the floor. But, yeah, and if it is this misdirection of trying to sell tickets or whatever, I mean, if we're going to jump on coaches for these rest games, you know, and that's part of the reason Stern threw his fit at Popovich 3-4 years ago, whatever it was, because he didn't let people know was what they really hammered him for, that technicality. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see how this is better, you know, especially if, you know, a guy's been hurt and you're saying, no, but he'll be there at some point.
Right.
Well, you can't make that promise. So, I don't know. Yeah, as you asked initially, I don't think there is a lot of reason for trust, which is not a good habit to get in with, you know, treating your fans that way.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the misinformation part in particular, because yes, Hinkie, you know, you can argue he treated his players like assets, you know, the Michael Carter Williams trade in particular. You look back on that now and it's a brilliant trade because Michael Carter Williams is mediocre and they could turn in the number 4 pick. That's beside the point. But what he didn't do is leak to the media like Colangelo has done. Like, he never held a player out of a game as a negotiating ploy. Which right. is just absurd. Like, if you're hitting Hinkie for treating players like assets, what Colangelo did to Jahlil Okafor is so much worse than anything that Hinkie ever did. And I want to give credit to Jahlil Okafor for handling this whole situation like a professional and not blasting the organization and, you know, coming back to Boston against Boston on Wednesday and, like, he just kind of worked his way back into the fold. You know, kudos to Brett Brown for handling this tough situation and having to be the public yeah. face for this. And, you know, he's credited Okafor as well. So, like, I just think, it, you know, it's not a good sign when your 21-year-old center that you are, quote-unquote, dangling in trade talks is acting more professional than your 51-year-old general manager. So, yeah,
that's
that's a good goddamn point right there.
I just really think, I think, Sarah, you nailed it. It's the misinformation that's killing me. Like, Hinkie, you know, yes, with the Jrue Holiday stuff in particular, when he traded him to New Orleans and he knew he was hurt, that was shady. But other than that, they never really had these leaks in terms of players' medical updates as well. Like, there was never, like, oh, well, Joel Embiid might come back for the last 10 games last season. Like, no, he was out for the year. They said that right away. And I think, you know, if I would have more respect for them for saying, look, Ben Simmons probably isn't playing this year. If he is, that would be great. We're not expecting it. Joel Embiid's going to be out through the All-Star break. He's not playing in the All-Star game. Fine, just be upfront, but don't label him for as day-to-day for 3 weeks, because clearly he's not day-to-day at that point. All right, Mort, any final thoughts on Colangelo before we move on?
No, I just realized that the Philly has missed 4 first seasons.
Yeah.
Like, one from Ben, one from Noel, and 2 from Embiid.
Plus Andrew Bynum.
That's... Well, he wasn't, like, a draft pick.
Yeah, but, like, in terms of guys who have missed a full season that, like, fans have looked forward to, starting with Andrew Bynum, it is now looking like a 5-year run.
So basically, if players are like, oh, I'm going through a divorce, I need a year off, you just, like, request a trade to the Sixers. That's where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Man. No, I mean, look, I get it. It's really hard. I could also imagine, like, Sixers fans being, I'm a little bit tired of the situation, even though it's completely out of their hands, Philly's and the organization's hands. But I kind of get why Philly is going the whole Ben Simmons might play route, because I can sort of see the average fan going, hey, why are you young guys always injured? Like, why are they not playing until they're a year in or 2 years in or whatever? But, like, look, you gotta still stay the course and be honest. Like, it doesn't really resolve anything if you promise something you can't uphold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just gonna make it worse. So I get the fan outcry. And I get the nervousness to the fan outcry, but I don't get the lying. The lying is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at the White House. You want to copy that? Come on now.
Right. I know. Exactly. I guess he's learning from the best. So hopefully, hopefully next time we record, they'll have traded Okafor. I can go back to being pleasantly surprised by Colangelo, but it felt like this last month really undid a lot of the goodwill that he had built up. really just by not doing very much, you know, just by being patient, which is all that fans could have asked for coming into the year. But yeah, he's really working to undermine all of the goodwill he built up very quickly. So fingers crossed that he has a productive All-Star weekend and we can have some good news to report for Sixers fans next time.
Well, yeah, but one thing, I want to ask this to Sixers fans out there. I want to start a little debate here.
Oh boy.
Because I think we can agree that when Hinkie left the organization, he had provided the team with like a treasure chest of assets, right?
Yep.
What is the fan reaction? I know it's going to be negative, but what is the fan reaction going to be if Colangelo essentially wastes these assets, which is a possibility?
Yeah.
Like, are we talking about a boycott of the team? Like, what kind of punishment, essentially, are we looking at from Sixers fans? What kind of reaction? Because, like, for years, they obviously tanked and fans weren't happy, but at least we saw the big picture in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I did in time.
Mm-hmm.
But if assets are beginning to get wasted and the team is going to suffer long term because of it, I really want to hear from Sixers fans, like, what are they going to do from that? Like, what is their reaction going to be? Because I could imagine that being the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, no one would attend games and... Or am I just completely off base?
It's hard to say, only because if he wastes those assets, that probably means they're just going right back to mediocrity. Like, they're, you know, unless Embiid turns into like the next Greg Oden and Ben Simmons never gets a jump shot, like, they have enough built up already that, like, they're not going to be the Brooklyn Nets. But, like, maybe their ceiling is a 40-45 win team. They're back into the treadmill of mediocrity where they were.
Exactly. That's actually the worst part, right? That's the worst scenario.
Yeah, that would be a nightmare. And at that point, I would hope fans boycott it until Colangelo, the entire Colangelo clan gets eradicated from the franchise. So let's hope that doesn't happen. But we'll report back on the Sixers next week either way, because if they don't trade Okafor, I'm going to have another rant ready. But let's move on now, because we have to talk about the All-Star game itself. You know, we mentioned Kevin Love is out from knee surgery, so Adam Silver named a replacement for him for the All-Star game, and he chose Carmelo Anthony. So, Mort, as our Eastern Conference guy, what do you think about Melo as the Love replacement? Do you think he was deserving, or should there have been someone else?
Damn it, Adam, you chose the wrong Nick.
There you go.
Yeah, like, and if it wasn't gonna be a Nick, it should have been Bradley Beal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could have ducked that. Hell, even Otto Porter would have been a better choice.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne Wade, maybe. Oh, okay, now I'm second.
That's a stretch. Wade's
been bad. Wade's been so bad defensively. So, but no, I'm not feeling the Melo choice at all. It seemed like it almost seemed like it's one of those. You know, lifetime achievements awards.
Yeah.
Still, like, yeah. Hey, let's just squeeze out whatever award or whatever credentials we can get. You're like, hey, here you go. Just take it. And it just seems so ridiculous. He wasn't a part of the All-Star program for a reason to begin with. He's had a bad year. The Knicks suck. It's just, no, man. That's just, you couldn't have gone in a worse way, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, just raw box score numbers, he is outscoring Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal has more threes per game, but like, Melo has what you would consider the numbers of an All-Star. He's averaging like 23 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 threes a game. My thinking with it is, I'm guessing it's kind of like a sorry you've had to put up with James Dolan for 5 years award, and especially lately.
Ooh.
With like this whole Phil Jackson drama and with the James Dolan, Charles Oakley stuff, I'm thinking Adam Silver basically threw Carmelo a bone and was like, you know, you're one of the public faces of our league. You've represented the Knicks for 5 years. I'm sorry about this. Here's an All-Star bid for you. Like, Bradley Beal.
Damn it, now you're making me sympathetic.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking that's what it felt like, honestly. It was, you know. I mean, Carmelo's been playing well, but Yeah, I feel like this is also for having Phil Jackson sniping at you every week. So
right. Yeah. Right.
Sorry about that. And he has handled it well, to his credit. So, but yeah, I kind of felt like Bradley Beal had a good case, as much as the Wizards have been surging. But it's not the way it went.
Yeah.
So Adam Silver gave Melo a safe space.
Yeah.
That's so fitting. Also to Melo, because he's sort of thin-skinned at times. Though he hasn't been this season, I've got to give him credit for that. But no, that's actually pretty... That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. Thank you, because now I feel better with that choice, because that's it shows a little human decency, if that's the case.
Right. Yeah, I think it's fair. I'm with both of you that Bradley Beal, in terms of performance, is more deserving. But, you know, I think for Melo's maturity with handling this nonsense, I don't mind him being in the All-Star game. And Bradley Beal is only 23. He's going to have plenty of chances to make one of these moving forward. Same with Otto Porter. Al Horford's the other guy who might have been in there, but, you know, whatever. I think in terms of an all-star game, Al Horford is just not that type of, you know, fun, flashy player who could go off for 50. Like, Carmelo, at least, will just pull up and shoot a bunch of absurd three-pointers.
Come on, Al, catch lobs.
Yeah, right, exactly. Play defense. Uh-oh. We don't do that here. All right, so Mort, for a deep dive section this week, you sent this idea, so I'm going to throw it, frankly, to Sarah, because this is a really right up her alley. So Mort wanted to discuss why, you know, Golden State and Cleveland have been perceived as the championship favorites since the start of the season, but why are we sleeping on the San Antonio Spurs? They are now 43-13, despite losing Tim Duncan. They really might not lose 20 games this year. Kawhi's playing what one would argue is MVP caliber, and they've survived without Pau Gasol for the last couple weeks. So, Sarah, what are you thinking about your Spurs? Are they doing their annual Spurs slip under the radar, get the number two seed, and make it to the Western Conference Finals?
It's honestly, when Mort asked the question, why are we sleeping? It's kind of a time-honored tradition. Like, we can't have an NBA season without it, so... I don't know. I appreciate when it's not the Spurs fan who's like, why is it? Because everyone thinks we're whiners anyway. So I'm not ever going to bring it up. It won't be me. But I appreciate when it comes up every now and then. I mean, to be honest, I don't know how they're doing it. And I've watched them closely and I'm like, how? I don't know. But I kind of made a deal with myself at the beginning of the year because... I can't remember who it was. Might have been Shane Young, Adam Joseph, one of the guys who writes for 16 wins a ring now. But he said he had like a prediction for the Spurs at the beginning of the year. Said, I think they're going to take a significant step back, like 50, 55 wins. And, like, I had to pull myself back from that. Whether you agree with it, disagree with it, whatever. The fact that somebody could say about your team, significant step back and 50-55 wins is like absurd. So I was like, you know what, I'm not complaining about shit this year because I'm like, we know we're spoiled, but that's ridiculous. So I'm just enjoying the ride. It's been a weird year. The offense is nothing like what we're used to. Actually, it kind of almost throws back to the Tim Duncan MVP days in that it's a lot more plodding, but they try to get the motion going still when they can. But I mean, you look at them right now, they have the number one defense for all the talk about, adding Powell, having LaMarcus, losing Tim, Kawhi's numbers being weird. They're at 101 points per 100 possessions that they're giving up. And they're the number five offense at 110 points per 100 possessions. So they're right there in that contender spot, obviously the second best record in the league. I don't know. A lot of it goes to Kawhi, which we will get to shortly. Yes. He has been incredible.
Indeed.
He's just carrying a lot of the load. They still have a bench that's performing well. It's weird because I think with Powell going down, the offense has looked really strange. And if I had any... issue or concern about, of course it's the Warriors, so, but I don't know that they'll have ultimately the firepower to really stay with a team like the Warriors. Of course, not too many teams do. I think they'll defend them pretty well, but we'll just have to see when Powell comes back, because the offense has taken a hit with him on the sidelines, so maybe they can get it going a little bit more. But I mean, they're right there. They have as good a chance as anyone who isn't the Warriors, I would say.
So, Mort, I'm going to throw this to you now, since you were the one who brought this up. Do you think they have the firepower on both ends, offensively and defensively, to take down the Warriors in a 7-game series?
Yeah, I was kind of fearing that question a little bit. Yep. Because I don't want to say no, they don't, because in a 7-game series, everything can happen, especially if the Spurs are involved.
Sure.
And I think Kawhi's 26-point average is kind of being slept on a little bit, and I actually think it's a little worse than what he can do. I think he's picking his spots. Like, when I'm watching games, he's not going for 30. Like, that's not his MO. He's taking open shots. He's driving when he's open. He's utilizing what the defense gives him. He's not going all Kobe, I'm going to jack up 17 shots in the first half. He's doing everything in the flow of the game. Now, put him in a 7-game setting where at times, if things get tough, he will have to manufacture shots out of his own ass, and I think he could do it. Even if he pushes himself and he forces up shots, I think he could end up taking high percentage shots. It's the supporting cast I'm concerned about. Mm-hmm. I am concerned about LaMarcus Aldridge a little bit in a 7-game series. I think he's kind of flying a little bit under the radar. He's averaging, 17.5 points, 7.3 rebounds in 32 minutes. Could be a little bit better. I mean, I just don't think the volume has been there for him this year. He's just kind of being a decoy. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely need to see him in a playoff series step up and, you know, go back to old school Portland LaMarcus. And then I want to see Patty Mills just continue what he's doing right now. He is Steve Kerr on steroids. Like, really, that's the role he has. Sarah, I'm going to throw this back to you, because this is like my biggest concern. Tony Parker. He went scoreless, I think, against the Knicks in 31 minutes. Mm-hmm. And he just seems to have these games where he provides next to nothing. Like, and then the following evening, he can score 17 and dish 5, right? It seems like there's a lot of inconsistency with him right now. So how do you handle that going into like the playoffs? What do you do there? How do you even game plan with him if you're Pop and you know that there's a risk of him playing 30 minutes and not producing a whole lot?
That's kind of what's weird about this whole season, really. I mean, they're in kind of this transitional phase, and it's kind of, I'll talk about it a little bit in Kawhi's MVP discussion as well, because a lot of the guys he's up against are more the de facto ball handlers or the point guards for their team, whereas Kawhi isn't. He's still sharing some of those possessions with Tony. And Tony, to his credit, does a terrific job still setting up LaMarcus a lot, running the pick and pop. I mean, he's a master at that kind of thing. But I think it's tough for him to understand. I remember Tim talking about last year that he was, even more than halfway through the season, still didn't quite know what his role was at that point. And I think Tony knows, but it's just from game to game, it's very different. You know, some games he's just getting a couple like open corner threes in a game, or he's like, he doesn't, you know, because he can still hit that pull up out of that pick and pop if they leave him. You know, he could still be aggressive at times, but he's not doing it every game. But on the flip side, you know, the more Kawhi has the ball, the better, because he really is the Spurs' best chance to score on every single possession. So it's weird. And thankfully, I'm not the one who has to answer those questions. But I don't know. I mean, that's what's going to be weird. Like you said, the supporting cast is kind of the question. They still have a bench that's performing well, and I made this point a few weeks ago, like, if they're really going to go far this year, which I had no expectation of, but it's going to be guys like Jonathan Simmons. You know, he would be someone that you would pick as an X factor, but he really can't even be that. He's actually got to play well for them to beat a team, obviously, like the Warriors, if they were to get that far. So that's really what it's going to be. Kawhi's going to be great, I have no doubt. And then LaMarcus, too, has been a question mark. He's been slumping for like 2 or 3 weeks. He had a really nice game right before the All-Star break, which I was going to bring up about the Magic when we were talking about the trades, because, you know, they were trying to bring back, well, make, not even bring back, make the super big lineup happen. And then Wednesday night, they were guarding LaMarcus with Jeff Green. And they kind of helped him, I think, come out of his slump. So we appreciate that. But, it was, you know, anyway. So, yeah, LaMarcus is going to be a guy. If he's getting a lot of those shots, Kawhi has now become really good at getting him that elbow jumper as well. But he has not made a lot lately. So if they go down, whole different team. Spurs looked 10 million times better Wednesday night than they've looked in weeks, all because he was making his shot. But it's going to come down to that.
Seems like people are also sleeping a little bit on Danny Green, right? Because, like, remember last year? Last year he was slumping.
He was rough last year. Yeah,
he had a bad year. Let's just call it like it is. And I've seen this trend of people believing that bad year has somehow continued. And I'm like, have you even watched him shoot this year? He's shooting like 40% from downtown.
Anytime he has a bad game, people will come out of the woodwork to say, "Man, is he ever going to shoot well again?" It's like, where have you been the whole year? But yeah, that's Danny's plight, unfortunately.
This feels like Robert Covington, the Spurs version of Robert Covington. All right, since we've alluded a lot to the MVP talk, we're going to move right into our awards updates. So this is who we would pick for each major award as of the All-Star break. There's about a third of a season left. So we did this the first third. We'll do this again. And then we'll give our final picks at the end of the year. So let's start right away with MVP. Sarah, make the case for your boy Kawhi, please.
All right. And it's really going to be tough this year, but it's fun and I'm enjoying it. Because there really are legitimately four people, I think, who could win it. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but that's me keeping Kevin Durant out. So if you're the kind of person who doesn't give a shit about him going to the Warriors and, you know, just appreciates what he's doing on the floor, then there's five. But it's going to come down to an argument, and we talked about this in the beginning of the year, of, like, what's the real criteria? You know, is it record? Is it efficiency? Is it, you know, who's the most valuable to their team, period? So that's going to be the argument this year, and it will be interesting to see what wins out, because Kawhi, I mean, obviously, okay, Russ is averaging a triple-double, which is ridiculous. Harden is not far off of that. He's got 8.3 rebounds per game. Everything else, he's double figures. Kawhi, he keeps moving up. He's creeping up because Powell's been out and he's been carrying a heavy load and he's got all these 30-point game explosions. So he's crept up from 10th in scoring to 9th to 8th right now. He's at about 26 per game, actually even with LeBron at the moment. He's also at 5.9 rebounds, 3.3 assists. The assists is really the biggest gap, although I can tell that's going to be my next... I haven't come out with a Kawhi article in a while. That will have to be my next thing, I can tell, because now the argument is that he's not a playmaker. Granted, he's not LeBron, but like I said, he's also not playing essentially starting point guard for his team like the people he's up against. He actually is really coming along as a playmaker, and so I would be happy to point out how soon, but... that'll be the thing. I think those numbers are going to creep up as well. But yeah, his raw assist numbers aren't going to be there with the other guys. But then you look at efficiency. He's obviously mere percentage points off of a 50-40-90 year right now.
Jeez.
Which Harden and Russell are not close.
Yeah.
And there again, if you're going to look at the assist numbers, then you also got to look at the turnover numbers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now he's not handling the ball as much as those guys, but they're both pretty high up there. They both have over 5 turnovers a game. Kawhi is at 2. You look at team record, obviously Kawhi's team is second. He's got 5 fewer losses than Harden and, good lord, 12 fewer than Russ.
Yeah.
Also, player efficiency rating, they are all right there. They're top 3. You got Russ is number 1 with 29.5. Kawhi, 28.2. Harden, 27.6. So they're right there. And honestly, we got to make the case for LeBron because he's right there with all these guys as well. Mm-hmm. So, man, it's going to be interesting. LeBron's efficiency as well is like off the charts, except for his free throw shooting is pretty dismal at the moment. He's at, what, 68.9%. But he's over 50% from the field, and he's 38.9% from three this year, which I think has gone a little overlooked. So it's just – it's an insane year, and I can't wait to see how it plays out. But look, the Kawhi MVP train is starting to roll, so you guys got to jump on board with me.
All right, Mort, did she convince you, or do you have a different pick for MVP at this point?
Well, you're forgetting who you're talking to here. Who did I choose prior to the season, huh?
Are we all just going to cape?
And I was ridiculed.
We're all just going to cape for the ones that we chose at the beginning of the year?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay, good.
All right, now, here's the thing, though. I did waffle on it afterwards because he did not have enough of a scoring punch to start the season. In the 2016 part of the season, he was about 23 and a half, maybe 24. That sounds about right?
Yeah, he was around.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. In the 20 games he's played in 2017, though, 28.2 points a game in just 33.6 minutes. That's damn near a point a minute. Come on now.
Yeah.
5.7 rebounds, 3.7 assists. He's shooting 51 from the field, 39 from three. 86.6 from the line, which is actually below his season average, which means there's even potential to see that crack 90 on 7.9 attempts per game. 1.5 steal, 1 block, just 2.2 turnovers, and only 1.7 fouls even. Oh. Like, come on.
Wow.
He is so close to perfection right now, and he is understanding that the larger role that he has inherited, that it kind of suits him. He's realizing just how good, goddamn good that he is right now. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him average damn near 30 for the rest of the year, which would bring his average up to roughly 27.5 point a game when all is said and done with the season. And you know what? Then he's there. Then he's there. Then I don't care about Russ's triple-double. Then I don't care about James Harden's many, many assists. Because I care about Kawhi being the best two-way player in the game, which I've said before, and people are all up in my grill. What about LeBron? Well, you know what? I love LeBron. His ability is amazing, but he's not as consistent a defender as Kawhi is, and I don't care about the on and off numbers.
Yeah.
Just watch the damn game. He gobbles people up. It's insane.
Right.
I mean, come on, people gave that so much press. Like,
don't
you know the defense was actually better when Kawhi was on the bench? Is he an overrated defender? No, come on, stop reading the goddamn numbers. Just, like, back him up with watching the games. That wasn't the case.
Right.
That was just bad rotation, you know, coincidental situation.
Like, well, I think we should give him credit for the fact that teams are literally game planning to remove him from the play.
Right.
You know, I mean, that doesn't happen. That's insane. But that's how much respect they have for him. And for all of that, his defensive rating is 101.6. That's ninth. And his defensive win share is 3.2 at eighth right now. Hmm. And he's tied with Russell for eighth in, like, steals on the season. I think he's got 92 steals on the season right now, which he's going to just continue to gobble up. And he doesn't gamble. He just rips the ball out of people's hands. So,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't even mention defense. Yeah. But, yeah, he's making up for whatever you want to talk about as a playmaker. Not only is he setting his teammates up, but he's also doing so much more on the other end. So, I mean, he's got a heck of an argument.
Yeah,
he has.
I think defense is really the big selling point for him, right? Like, because, I mean, LeBron, you can make that too, but, like, Russ and James Harden, it's almost purely offense with rebounds mixed in. But, like, most of their case is just they are, without them, their teams would be, like, basically the Phoenix Suns. Like, they would be a 15-win team. But they have, like, they're just such the integral, like, head of the snake that their teams absolutely need them to run any sort of functional offense. Whereas Kawhi, like, yeah, Sarah, to your point, like, teams do not game plan defensively for wings. Like, they do for big men. You know, if you're facing a Rudy Gobert or Joel Embiid, you might tell your guards to, like, hey, don't try to drive into the paint as much. Like, you're probably going to get your shot blocked. But for wings, it's not like, hey, you're playing Jimmy Butler or Paul George, let's change our entire offensive scheme. It's like, well, we're going to let one guy get swallowed up. But for Kawhi, it's like, oh, man, you know, there it goes. We just have to write this one guy completely off. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, I think right now I would put LeBron fourth, and I think the 1-2-3 with Kawhi, Russ, and James Harden is really a matter of preference. Like, if you're wowed by numbers the most, you're going Russ. If you focus mostly on, you know, who's the best two-way player, you're going Kawhi. I'm going to still cape for Harden, not only because he was my preseason pick, and I so desperately want that to be right to make fun of you guys for mocking me so much. But, I mean, more. I remember you asked me this at the start of the year. You know, it was like, well, why are you picking Harden if, you know, Russ you think is going to have better numbers, which is the case. But I think narrative is going to work in Harden's favor this year, because Harden 2 years ago was the runner-up. Last year, the Rockets were just so disappointing, and, you know, there was the, like, chemistry concerns with Dwight Howard. You know, is James Harden, like, willing to be a leader? This year, he's kind of putting all of that to rest. He's made Mike D'Antoni, like, look like a functional NBA coach again after his disastrous runs in New York and L.A. You know, Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson are both playing better than they ever did in New Orleans, and a large part of that is James Harden. Like, his switch to the position of full-time point guard is going to help his case. And then the Rockets have just so vastly overachieved from their preseason projections. Like, they have the fourth best record in the league right now. You know, not even when we were talking about that, I said, like, yeah, I think the Rockets are going to be a little bit better than OKC. Like, maybe they're fifth and OKC seventh. You know, I didn't expect them to be third in the West heading into the All-Star break. So if they can keep that up, if they can stay ahead of the Clippers even once Chris Paul comes back, then I think Harden's going to have a real case. But, I mean, if anything, I think this conversation shows that it's still anyone's game two-thirds of the way through the season. It's not, you know, we've been saying this all year, but it is not like last season when Steph Curry was the unanimous MVP. Like, this is going to be a very razor-thin close race.
Do allow me a rebuttal, kind
please,
sir.
Please.
Because you just said something that pissed me off. You said that Kawhi's calling card, you didn't say calling card, but his hook, more or less, was defense, right? And you said that Harden's narrative is what's going to sell it. Well, let me change the goddamn narrative.
Okay.
I'm looking right now at the per 36 numbers, just scoring-wise. Mm-hmm. Harden's at 28.7 points a game per 36 minutes. Mm-hmm. Kawhi, 27.8. So there's a difference of just 0.9 points per 36 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now let's look at true shooting percentage. Because Harden, as we know, is an efficient scorer. His true shooting percentage is 61.5. Let's go to Kawhi. Well, shit. 61.9. That's better. So Kawhi, just being 0.9 points behind Harden while being more efficient and playing all-world defense. Like, his calling card is no longer defense. This is a narrative that needs to end. He is right now a very similar scorer to the guy who many believe is the league's best scorer in James Harden.
It's a fair point.
So let's give Kawhi the offensive credit that he is so sorely due. Because we still have this idea that Kawhi, he's the Pippen type. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who, that when Mike left, Pippen, he's like the 22-point guy. No. This Kawhi is so much more than that. He is an efficient Kobe.
Ooh, that's a good way of putting it.
Look, this is where we're going, offensively speaking. He is an efficient Kobe Bryant. I am going to take an efficient Kobe Bryant over James Harden every goddamn day of the week. And it's not even close.
So I get what you're saying. You cannot say Kawhi Leonard is not running away with the MVP right now. You cannot.
No. I'm saying what I'm taking. Oh, though. Yeah. Like, if you put James Harden, Right. Okay, you put James Harden and Kawhi Leonard up against each other, and you're standing right there, and you have to pick one of them to start a team,
based on the
current stats of them right now, I am picking Kawhi Leonard so fast you wouldn't even hear me say it.
Well, working in your favor is the fact the league is inundated with strong point guards, and wings are, you know, you've got a couple elite wings, but not nearly. You could find a lot more elite point guards than you can elite wings. So in terms
that's fair.
In terms definitely of position, or positional rarity, I should say, Kawhi definitely gets the advantage there. Either way, we will be debating this a lot, I'm sure, as the season comes down.
We have a war going here regarding the MVP. I love it.
Well, it's been a blowout the last year, and even the year before, Curry looked, it was between Curry and Harden, but Curry looked like the front runner the whole year. So it's fun to have. I think we're just like getting 3 years of MVP voting. We're finally getting all of that rage out. So let's move on.
It's fun again.
Let's move on to Rookie of the Year. Let me just ask this before we take our picks. If Joel Embiid comes back and plays 15 more games this year, do we agree that he would be the consensus Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, I think so.
Wart, you look a little pained.
Well, I'm going to make you happy now.
Oh, okay.
I think even if he doesn't return this year,
that
he is the Rookie of the Year.
Wow. See, I'm worried about that, but I'd like to hear your rationale.
Well, he is so much better than everyone else right now. It's the difference is so ridiculous, it's not even worth mentioning. I mean, look, I think it was Patrick Ewing who won a Rookie of the Year award when he played 49 or 50 games his rookie season.
I want to say it was Kyrie who had the fewest with 50. But Ewing might have because it was a shortened season, I think. But I'm pretty sure.
No, I think it's the other way around, right?
Oh, is it?
Didn't Kyrie come in into the... he was drafted in 2011.
Yeah, you're right. My bad.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Ewing missed 32 games.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Embiid might be looking at missing 50 games. So that's reversed. But still, I mean, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the impact, this is a 7'2 guy who's draining threes, doing Hakeem Olajuwon, dream shakes, whatever. I mean, clearly he's the best player in this rookie class. And I mean, you've got to reward that even if he's going down. I mean, I know that's against conventional wisdom, but I am so going Embiid here. I don't even care. Like, I love your second pick. I saw the list that you made, like Malcolm Brogdon could be second on hand. I am not sleeping on Malcolm Brogdon at all. He's been terrific. There are a lot of guys who are getting their feet moved on. Like, Marcus Chris has also come alive.
Yep.
You know, there are a lot of guys, you know, starting to heat up, but, you know, Embiid is just, he was just special, right?
Yeah. I mean,
or is. Right. Sorry, I didn't mean to present that in past tense.
Yeah, he still is special, and he will be special for the next 15 years, please and thank you.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a fair case. It's really just the historical precedent that's working against him, especially if he comes back. You know, you have to figure they're still going to limit him on back-to-backs and hold him out on one. So, like, he would be making history in all likelihood if he wins, because he probably will play the fewest games of anyone to win. Working in his favor is how bad the rest of the rookie class is, or how like unimpressive I should say. You know, Brandon Ingram has cracked the starting lineup lately, but he's not doing all that much. Jaylen Brown, like most of the other top lottery picks are either just on the fringes of their rotations, or like they're starting to work their way in, but they're just not making a huge impact. Whereas I mean, for the month of January in particular, the Sixers came and went with Embiid. Like, if he played, they were good. If he didn't play, they were garbage, and there was no point watching them. Now, recently, since he's been out, they're starting to find their feet without him. Like, Nerlens Noel has been a lot better since he came back into the rotation. But, I mean, the Sixers were fun, again, to watch because of Embiid. So, for that reason, I would hope that, you know, even if he only plays 31 games, he would be Rookie of the Year. I don't think that will be the case. The one guy, aside, you know, Malcolm Brogdon right now would be my pick if I had to pick someone that wasn't Embiid, but the one guy I'm keeping an eye on is Dario Saric, because he's coming alive lately. And, you know, it looks like Ersan Ilyasova was playing really well earlier in the season alongside Embiid. Since Embiid has gone out, Ilyasova has not been as efficient, and Dario has really come on, especially in the last six games, which I will talk about a little bit later. So, you know, if, you know, the trade deadline's Thursday, like if the Sixers can find a taker for Ilyasova, Saric suddenly has a wide open opportunity at the four, especially if Ben Simmons, you know, probably isn't going to play this year. So, you know, watch out for Saric as a dark horse in the MVP, especially if Embiid can't come back this year. Sarah,
good shout.
Sarah, do you have any thoughts on who you would pick if not for Embiid?
No, I agree with you. It should be Brogdon, if not Embiid.
All right, I like it. So let's move on to Sixth Man of the Year, which is hopefully will not be as contentious as MVP, but is likewise pretty wide open right now. So, Sarah, I'm going to go with you first. Who would you pick right now as your Sixth Man of the Year?
You know, it's kind of tight. Like, I guess it probably will default to team record. But Lou Williams is actually doing just a little bit more and a little less time than what Eric Gordon is doing.
Yep.
But yeah, I think Eric Gordon will get it, not only because Houston is so much better, but just also because of, you know, the fact that he's had a lot of struggles in his career and he's been really steady and consistent for them this year. So I'd be happy to see him win it, honestly.
Yeah, me too. What about you, Mort?
Yeah. Well, it's very difficult to argue against Sarah's point here. Lou Williams is sporting a 24.1 PER in the season. He has a true shooting percentage of almost 61. Like, those metrics, those are actually all-star worthy. Mm-hmm. And consider the fact that he's not a great defender, but he's not like Isaiah Thomas, James Harden back.
Right.
I mean, so if he had played on a better team, and actually gotten more minutes as a starting two guard or something, he would have been an all-star candidate. So it's, I like the Lou Williams selection in that regard, but the narrative, you mentioned narrative earlier in terms of the MVP, that goes in Eric Gordon's favor, because we all love a redemption story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and let's not sleep on the fact that he's also absolutely balling when Harden's off the court.
Right.
Like, then he becomes their number one option, and he's taking over and doing whatever is necessary, really stepping into his offensive game. So it's a toss-up in terms of who's going to win it. I think Lou has the better season, but I think Eric Gordon is the better player, if that makes any sort of sense.
Yeah, that does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
And then with Gordon having the narrative, then I think it's him.
Right, yeah. I think those are definitely the two, at least that I can think of, the two front runners for the award. I'm with you guys. I think Gordon wins it, not necessarily because his production is better than Lou Williams, because they're frankly about even. And Lou Williams is doing it in much less time. Like, he's what, like 18 points in 24 minutes a game? Like, it's insane. Yeah. And he's leading all Lakers in terms of win shares. I mean, if not for Lou Williams, the Lakers would be tragically bad this year. So for that reason, I'm almost inclined to go with Lou, but for the narrative reason, I'm taking Eric Gordon. Also, I have a sneaky suspicion that Lou Williams will be playing for another team come Friday, at which point that might jeopardize his six-man chances, just because, you know, it might take him a little while to find his niche on his new team. He might not be getting as many shots, so on and so forth. But right,
Spurs. I want him on the Spurs.
That would be fun. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, Cleveland, you know, they're the ones who say they need a playmaker so badly. They don't really have anything else to trade. Washington would be a fun one, because their bench has just been so damn bad. Like, I don't know.
Oh, you just found it, Brian. That's a lovely one.
I know. Like, if they gave up their first-round pick this year for Lou Williams.
Oh, I'm digging that.
Right?
I am really digging that. Yeah. That would be great. I mean, look, Lou on a per-minute basis right now in per 36 is scoring 27.7. That's Kawhi
level. Right, yeah, we were just talking about, yeah, that's like Kawhi at James Harden level, exactly. Yeah. Yep, you're welcome, Ernie Grunfeld. Got it done. All right, so let's move on to most improved player. This is also suddenly a much more interesting race, I would say. So, Morten, you're the one who talked me into Greek Freak in the first third of the year. Are you still sticking with our boy Giannis?
Well, how can you not? Like, what he's doing right now at that age is just ridiculous, but he's getting some competition from Nikola Jokic, and Otto Porter is a fair call as well. I know you wrote both of them up in our pre-podcast email, as per usual. It's a nice trio of improved guys, but I can't, you know me, I've been against having like highly drafted players in this category because they're expected to improve.
Right.
And yeah, like Giannis is one pick outside the lottery. He was drafted 15th. So in that sense, he should count. But it's just when you're drafted for, what was it, 41st?
Jokic. As Jokic? Yeah.
Second round. Yeah. I think 41st, I think. Like, no one expected that. That means teams passed him up twice.
Right.
So that makes it more, I guess, romantic.
Yeah.
So I would kind of like to see that happen, just because I want to romanticize about it a little bit. But, you know, Giannis has obviously earned it. He's just burning the league up, and it's going to be his league like next year.
Yeah.
I'm so terrified of seeing what Giannis is going to put up next year.
Yeah.
Like, I could totally see like 32-8-8 like Michael's season.
Yeah, if he ever adds a three-pointer, it's over. We just need to pack it up and go home. Sarah, who would you pick for most improved?
This is a tough one for me personally, but because I like Jokic so much, but
yeah.
I still think that Giannis is, you know, he's the front runner for sure, and he's so good on both sides of the ball. Like you, like you guys said, he hasn't even become a totally consistent shooter yet, so that will be absolutely terrifying. I have seen some people arguing. I know Morten doesn't like, if you're a relatively high pick for you to be in this argument. Then I've seen other people arguing they don't like second-year players for this. Do you guys think that matters at all?
Are they saying that because you're just expected to make such a big jump from rookie to sophomore season?
I don't know if that's it, or they feel like you could even improve more, so they want you to be further into your career.
Oh,
I don't know.
That's interesting.
It actually is. Like, I hadn't really put a whole lot of thought into it. I mean, I guess there's some merit to the idea, but if you explode from your rookie season to your sophomore season, why shouldn't you, like, be rewarded with that? So that seems kind of ridiculous to me, but yeah, no, I wouldn't support that line of thinking at all. No.
And not even, I mean, Jokic struggled the first month and a half of this season because they were playing him with Nurkic and it didn't really work all that well.
Right.
So the middle of December, he wasn't putting up, you know, as someone who owns him in a keeper league, he wasn't putting up the numbers I expected, and then they benched Nurkic and promoted Jokic, and now all of a sudden you'll have to pry him from my cold dead hands. Like, he's putting up triple doubles against the Warriors. So I'm with you guys. I think it's Giannis' award to lose, especially with Jabari out for the year now. If the Bucks are going to keep their playoff hopes alive, Giannis needs to put up just preposterous numbers, which I think he's going to do. That said, I think Jokic probably is going to finish second, and then my boy Otto Porter will be third. All right, so let's go to Defensive Player of the Year, another one where there is no clear front runner, unless you guys want to cape for Kawhi here. So I'm going to throw this one to you first, Sarah. Who do you have for Defensive Player of the Year?
I'm going to tell you who I think is going to win it.
Okay.
Not necessarily who I would pick, but I think Draymond's going to win this year. I think it's his year. I just kind of felt the winds blowing that way since the beginning of the year.
Right.
And he's obviously, he's always been deserving. The last 3 years, he's been right up there with Kawhi. It's hard for me to ever pick against Kawhi for it, though. I know Rudy Gobert, a lot of people are picking him this year. I don't think it's his this year. I need to watch them again more, though. Like, I saw them a little bit in the beginning of the season, and just the way that they were covering pick and rolls, I did not love, and I don't think it was even his fault. I think that's how he was told to play them, but he was sagging really deep, like, as if he was Shaq, which is not super helpful. Sure. But then you look at the way that they're defending teams. They're almost, like, taking teams back to, you know, mid-2000s defenses. So it's pretty damn impressive, especially with pace the way it is this year. He's totally turning teams back. So he's definitely got an argument, but I think it's probably between Kawhi and Draymond, and I think Draymond is going to win.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Mort, how about you? Where do you see this?
That's definitely fair logic right there, because, you know, there were a lot of people who thought Draymond was cheated out of one of those.
Right.
Yeah. So I could see that definitely playing a part. Oh, but I do want to see Rudy Gobert get the award. Mm-hmm. And I agree, Sarah, the narrative here is going to change everything. But I think Rudy has been so deserving. Like, he's playing old school basketball, like you alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
He's really just taking shots away from the rim, which is like the most high percent shots. And he can even on occasion switch out to shorter players. And his length is just bothering everyone. Mm-hmm. He's so cat quick for a guy 7'2". I'm mesmerized when I see him play. The when he's really in tune with the game, and he has these mental lapses at times, but when he doesn't have those and he's just like, he feels the game, my goodness, you can't even get like close to him and he'll block the shit out of him.
Right.
So I'm really digging what he's doing for Utah this year, and God help Utah if he goes down. Because their entire defense would just, I would just drown.
That would be the end. Yeah.
So I have him as the. If you could, we should change it up and say like the most valuable defensive player.
Hmm.
Like that would be interesting because that would change it up a little bit.
Yeah. Because then, I'm with you, Sarah, in thinking Draymond probably will win. But Mort, I'm with you in thinking that Rudy Gobert should win. I'm not gonna say we should just look at defensive win shares and that's it, because James Harden is 15th in the league in defensive win shares. So clearly it is not the end all be all for defensive statistics. But Rudy Gobert does lead everyone in that. He has the second highest block percentage in the league. I mean, you know, defensive player of the year tends to come from a team with one of the best defenses. Spurs are top, and then Warriors and Jazz are tied for second with their like 0.6 points per 100 possessions behind the Warriors. So like Kawhi, Rudy, Draymond, any of these three are good picks. And like MVP, like most improved player, like sixth man of the year, it's going to come down in the final third of the season. But I would give Gobert the edge just because, Mort, as you said, like, Utah's entire defense is reliant on having that rim protector to cover up any mistakes. And it's not, you know, Gordon Hayward's been playing defense really well this year. George Hill has as well. It's not like, you know, Utah, their only good defender is Gobert, but he does erase a lot of mistakes at the rim. So for that reason, I would go him. So let's bag out these last two. Coach of the Year. Sarah, I'm going to make you happy. I'm taking Pop just because I'm convinced at this point he could take like a JV middle school team and probably get 35 wins in the NBA. Like, I do not know how he has this team with this roster as the second best team in the league. No offense to the Spurs, because like he's got, you know, they have a lot of fun, promising players. You know, you've been caping for Davis Bertans the whole season. DeJounte Murray's playing really well. But it's just like, I don't understand how they... When's the last time they didn't win 50 games? It's in the 90s. Like, there's like an 18-year-old kid out there that's never seen the Spurs win fewer than 50 games. So for that reason, I'm doing Pop. What about you, Mort?
Yeah. For a brief moment, I considered D'Antoni just because of what he's achieved in Houston. But, you know, I've always said the coach of the year, and this is a double standard of mine, because you could argue that the MVP should go to the best player every year, but whatever. Coach of the Year for me is always the best coach. Mm-hmm. And that's Pop. Like, Pop should have, like, what, 10?
Right, yeah.
He really should have. I mean, when he retires, then one day we're going to look back and we're going to regret that he ends up with, like, what does he have now? Three? Two or three?
I think it's three.
Something?
Three.
Huh? Yeah. Three? Yeah. All right. Well, he probably should have had 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
Maybe even 8.
Yeah.
And so I'm all in on give Pop what he deserves. So just, dear media, everyone out there with a vote, just ignore whatever narrative is playing in and just give Pop the damn vote. Just do it.
Yeah.
Because you'll regret it.
Or just rename the award after him. If you're not going to give it to him, just call it the Greg that Popovich too. Coach of the Year Award.
Yeah.
Sarah, are you going to, as the Spurs fan, are you going to disagree with us as Pop?
You know, usually I don't look at him for this award. I think probably because I'm aware of my biases and I, sure. So I kind of look away from him. But, and I think, Morton, at the beginning of the year, didn't we both pick Thibodeau? But that didn't work out.
Don't tell anyone. Come on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was trying to not pick Pop, but at this point it's pretty hard for me to not. I don't see anyone else who really has a great case. Spoelstra's doing a really great job with Miami right now.
That's true.
Carlisle is, you know, he's got the Mavs coming back from the dead. Right. So I always think he's one of the best in the league as well, but yeah, I think Pop has emerged as the front runner at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, usually, you know, I don't know if a guy's going to win an award because he coached a crappy roster to the number 8 seed, especially when like Pop is coaching Kawhi and like a bunch of kind of, you know, like they have talent still. I'm not going to say he's playing with no one, but no one expected this team to win 55 games. I'll say that much. Like, we all picked the Clippers to finish ahead of the Spurs. The Spurs look pretty solidly at second place. So,
all right, we did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's just go to.
Why do you always bring up something that makes us look like idiots, Brian?
Yo, we picked Kawhi and Harden.
Hey,
for
that was
MVP.
The trendy pick. So
yeah, that's true.
I don't think we can look like idiots right. unless everyone looks like idiots.
That's true. All right, so Executive of the Year, Sarah, who do you have for this one?
I'm still Dennis Lindsay. I like the Jazz a lot. Obviously, Daryl Morey's got a really good argument too, though. But I prefer the Jazz team.
Okay, that's fair. Mort, how about you? Executive of the Year.
I think it should be a sarcastic kind of vote and then go to Gar. Just, and I think the reasoning in the press conference should be like, Gar has just exemplified professionalism at every possible level of the NBA's infrastructure. She's been such a great job with journalists, handled player issues so well, just built a team that fits so beautifully together. Just reinvented the wheel, basically. Why not? No, I'm with you, Brian. I know who you got. That's Daryl Morey.
Yeah.
Like, could it be anyone else at this point? I mean, he took a gamble on two guys who had severe injury histories and turned them into huge components for Houston. And just, look, I don't buy into the James Harden is a point guard thing. He's playing alongside Patrick Beverley. He's still a two guard. He just handles the ball a lot more. But it's the fact that he just set the play up for him in the way that he did.
Yeah.
He just opened up everything. He just surrounded James with shooters and not just, you know, not just any shooter. Shooters who could shoot from like 5 or 6 feet beyond because he knew that would give them an advantage. Mm-hmm. He took it to a whole another level. He knew that what he was going to get with Mike D'Antoni in there. And he just gave him the perfect roster to work with. So hats off to Daryl Morey. And let's also be honest, there's a bit of a redemption story there because he hadn't been doing like the best job in the last couple of years for Houston, wasting a couple of assets here and there, not really making the best moves. Like, he more or less gave up Terrence Jones and Domantas Montiunas, mm-hmm. both first round draft picks. Like, he didn't get anything in return for those guys. So those are wasted picks. And somehow he just redeemed himself.
Yeah.
I got to respect that.
Yeah, that's my guy too. I think, Sarah, you're right. Lindsay does have a very legitimate argument because that Jazz team, you know, we've said it all year, they're probably the deepest team in terms of like actual NBA rotation player talent. Like, they have realistically 11 or 12 guys who could play, you know, for the Sixers right now, or the Nets, God forbid. But yeah, I'm with Mort in choosing Morey. You know, Mort, you hit all the big ones, but also the Nene signing was kind of sneaky good for them, because he played big minutes when Clint Capela went down. Like, I don't know that Montrezl Harrell would have been okay by himself. Like, having kind of that platoon with Harrell and Nene was really kept them afloat with Capela out. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to Morey for having a vision. You know, he's had this Morey ball thing for a while now, but he really stuck to his guns, got the perfect coach for it, got great complementary players for it, and then, you know, you've been talking about wanting Jimmy to play on ball more, in large part because of what we've seen Harden do. So,
yeah,
you know, it took balls to make those moves, because they could have easily backfired, but they did not. So, yeah, Morey is my pick. So,
just one final note on Morey and the Rockets.
Yeah.
I'm just looking over the roster right now and who's contributing. Imagine if Morey trades Corey Brewer for a rotation guy who can shoot.
Mm.
That would, for me, absolutely cement him as this year's best executive.
Mm-hmm.
Because we shouldn't forget, the trade deadline is on Thursday,
right,
and that's going to sway opinion a whole lot. If one GM comes out looking like a genius, that could just change everything. But if Morey just gets rid of Corey Brewer and gets a rotation guy in there who can shoot and play in transition a little bit better, hell yeah. I mean, then what kind of weakness does the Rockets have offensively?
Right.
Like, nothing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so that's a great way to seg into our final section before our crushes of the week. As you mentioned, Mort, the trade deadline is Thursday. I think it's safe to say Rob Hennigan will not get GM of the year or executive of the year. But we will...
Going there so soon.
Yeah. We will probably see at least one or two more big moves. We've already seen the Ibaka deal, the Plumlee-Nurkic trade. So I want to go around. Everyone can either give either A, you could give something you think is going to happen, B, something you think should happen, or both. And Mort, as our trade deadline, or our trade machine guru, I want you to go first.
Oh, man. Yeah, I did see that in your pre-pod email, but that was difficult to me because what I want to see is Boston doing something, but I just don't know what specifically. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the problem.
Okay.
I do feel that Boston, having signed Al Horford this summer, they sort of promised their fan base and Al, let's be honest, that we're going to do something big here, mm-hmm. and we're going to do it now, because otherwise, why spend all that money on Al now? Like,
right.
Then you should have just, like, played the restricted free agency market and gotten a guy, like, for $18 million instead of $26 million, right? Yep. So I think you need to, if you're Boston, you need to think big now.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't love a Carmelo Anthony fit there, if the right package comes along...
Mm.
For Melo, and we know that Boston is one of those teams that Melo would waive his no trade clause for.
Right.
Then why not?
Yeah.
Why not? If the deal is right, and that means probably not the Brooklyn pick for this year,
mm-hmm.
probably the 2018 instead, because I don't think they want to risk giving up Markelle Fultz for
right.
Carmelo Anthony.
Right.
But you know, maybe the 2018 pick or something, and then Amir Johnson and. Yeah, Tyler Seller, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would fit cap wise.
Yeah.
But,
or like whatever. Yeah. Salary filler yeah. in general. Like you could throw in right. Jonas Jerebko or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then run Melo as the full time four. Mm-hmm. So you have Horford, Melo, Crowder, and then hey, who knows? Like Bradley and Marcus Smart seems to be finding it out in that two spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that could happen. Whatever whoever wins out. And then Isaiah Thomas at the one. The problem being, of course, that Melo still holds the ball a lot,
right.
but in Boston, under Brad Stevens, that might not be, you know, a big problem for long, because I think Stevens is one of those guys that Melo would immediately respect.
Yeah.
That's just a theory of mine, personally, but it's just like, who doesn't respect Stevens, right?
Right. Well, he'll have a chance to coach him this weekend in the All-Star game, so he'll get first.
That's a good point. Yeah,
so we'll get to see how Melo. I mean, not that they're running real sets or trying very hard, but we'll see how much Melo respects Brad Stevens on Sunday. Sarah, do you have any crazy trade ideas that you'd like to float out there?
Well, for what should happen, I think the Cavs should retroactively go back and pick up Briante Weber. But other than that, I don't really have much. Brook Lopez comes to mind, but I don't know what the situation is there. Is Brooklyn looking to move him at all? Or
yeah, they are.
They're looking for two picks.
Yeah, two first-round picks.
It's just kind of a shame, and has been a shame for a while, that he's wasting away in Brooklyn. But I don't know. I don't know where he might or could go for those two picks.
Yeah.
Portland.
That's pretty much it.
They just got Nurkic, though. New Orleans is the one Michael Scotto of Basketball Insiders reported Brooklyn offered. I think it was Tyreek Evans, Langston Galloway, Tim Frazier, and a 2018 protected first-round pick for Lopez, which the Nets immediately said no to, because that's a garbage offer. But, you know, the Pelicans have been sniffing around reportedly for compliments to Anthony Davis in the front court, so that does seem like a place he could land if the Pelicans up their offer a little bit.
Yeah, I don't see that happening, though.
I still kind of like Portland, even though they got Nurkic, because Nurkic just never played more than 17 minutes a game. Like, I mean, look, if the price is there, I mean, they could swing a three-way deal and say, because you can't send Alan Crabb to Brooklyn because of the offer sheet.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they need to do it for in a three-way trade, right? Mm-hmm. But they have those two picks. They have like a pick. Portland does. They have a pick that's currently slated for like, I think, 10th, and then one in the mid 20s or something. Mm. If you send those two picks and Alan Crabb needs to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But the point being that you get Brook Lopez and Sean Kilpatrick onto Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would be interesting.
Yeah, that could work. And, I mean, Lopez has shown three-point range for the first time in his career. I mean, I don't think they get two first-round picks for him, because Steve Kyler of Basketball Insiders reported they want the pick this year to be a lottery-level pick. I don't know if they're going to get that plus another first, but it does seem like, I mean, in terms of things, you know, the Nets have no incentive to tank, because obviously Boston owns their next two first round picks. But given Brook Lopez's history of foot injuries, you know, he missed almost two full seasons a couple of years ago with foot injuries. If I'm Brooklyn, I'm really considering moving him now, you know, instead of risking him getting hurt in the next 30 games, losing just about all of his trade value, because, you know, the Nets really need to restock their cupboard in terms of picks, prospects, just young players in general. And Lopez is their one guy that will allow them to do that. So that's one move I'd like to see made. I think the Lakers need to trade Lou Williams, if only because they need to protect that top three pick. You know, it pains me to say that as a Sixers fan, but if they fall out of the top three, that pick goes to Philly. So they need to tank, like, you know, the ever-living hell. Jim Buss is a dead man walking anyway, so there's no point in trying to cling to a playoff spot. You're not going to make the playoffs, and you're getting fired, Jim. And the one that I thought, you know, we've heard Reggie Jackson's name floated out around a little bit in the last couple of days. Zach Lowe had a column about it Thursday, and then just before we started recording, Mark Stein of ESPN said they've discussed a deal with the Magic, DJ Augustine and Jeff Green for Reggie Jackson. So that's one I'm kind of interested in. I'm not sure that they will make a deal, but there was a reported... earlier, I think like a month ago, I don't remember who reported it, but I think it might have been Zach Lowe, that there was like talks of a Reggie Jackson, Ricky Rubio swap. So that's the guy I'm keeping my eye on heading into the deadline, because as of a couple days ago, I would not have thought he was that available. But It sounds, you know, the Pistons have struggled with him on the court. He just hasn't really regained his form since coming back from that injury. So maybe with a full offseason, he'll be better again. But it would not totally shock me to see them move Reggie Jackson. And Mort, I'm with you. I think the Celtics, it's time to pull the trigger. And if it, you know, I personally think they should trade for Jimmy Butler. And I think they should give up that 2017 first round pick for him. You know, you have a 27-year-old Isaiah Thomas and a 31-year-old Al Horford. Like, you're built to win now. The Cavs are vulnerable. You might not beat the Warriors, but, like, the Cavs proved this week it takes one injury and the whole landscape is shaken up. So I can understand why they're hesitant to give up 9 years of team control for that, but there's no guarantee it turns out to be Markelle Fultz. They could slip to 3 or 4.
Exactly.
So it could be, like, Dennis Smith Jr. or, you know, Josh Jackson or something. Like, there's no guarantee that pick turns into Markelle Fultz or Lonzo Ball.
And that's why I'm hoping and I think that the Bulls are not going to move Butler until draft night.
Interesting. Yeah. So they want to know.
I don't think. Right. They don't want to risk sitting at 4th.
Right.
They just don't. Or, Gar Foreman, so everything's possible, I guess. But I just can't imagine that they would settle for that.
Yeah.
I think that it would be a fair... And look, it would be fair. I mean, come on. Jimmy Butler for Markelle Fultz, I mean, that's... I don't care. That's a fair deal, especially given Jimmy's contract, given his superstar status. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, and the fact that he's a known commodity. Markelle Fultz is not a known NBA commodity.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I would say that's fair.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go back one notch to the Brooklyn thing we talked about earlier, because you said that Brook Lopez is basically their only asset.
Yeah.
And I'm actually going to challenge that thing by making this point.
Okay.
Sean Kilpatrick right now
mm-hmm.
is a 27-year-old shooting guard who's averaging about 13.5 points, you know, 4 rebounds, can shoot, and he's earning less than $1 million, and he's locked up next year for $1 million and 51,000.
Mm.
That makes him a prime guy to send to a contender in need of strengthening their bench.
That's true.
Because he's cheap. That means they won't have to give up a big key guy.
Yeah.
So I think it's possible for Brooklyn to move Sean Kilpatrick for some future draft considerations.
Yeah.
Because he would help bolster a contender's bench significantly. So that's another guy they have right there at their disposal. I wouldn't be surprised to see him getting traded as well as Brook Lopez. I mean, I would basically just be selling off their veterans like candy bars.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, it doesn't matter. I mean, just sell them off. You're gonna lose anyway. Mm-hmm. Just get young guys, get draft picks.
Right.
Like,
yeah, I think, I shouldn't say Lopez is their only trade chip. He is their most valuable one, I would argue.
Right.
But yeah, they have Trevor Booker too. They have Bogdanovich. Like, they have other guys who they could and should trade. But yeah, I think Sean Marks will be wheeling and dealing to recoup some of the value that Billy King lost. So let's wrap things up this week with our weekly crushes. As always, these are guys who aren't getting the attention they deserve. They are not the Kevin Durants and LeBron Jameses of the world. So Sarah, who is your crush heading into All-Star break?
James Johnson down in Miami.
Nice. That's a good one.
He's averaging about 12 points, 5 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1 block, and 26 minutes, shooting 49% from the field. Even over his last 5, he's up to nearly 19 points a game. So he's been playing well for them, and they were hot until they lost their win streak to the mighty Sixers. But they still played really well, and he's a big part of it. So it's my crush.
I like it. Yeah, he's been playing really well. We've been singing his praises recently, just as a valuable member of that streaking Heat team until they, yeah, as you mentioned, ran into my undefeatable Sixers. Morton, how about you? Who's your crush of the week?
Well, now I feel bad because I use him. I chose Kristaps Porzingis as my crush simply because he didn't make the All-Star game.
Okay, that's fair.
And then you attack me with your logic. Oh, yeah. Damn you. Damn you. You're Americans. You shouldn't be supposed to have logic, especially under this current administration.
Yeah, it won't last for long, don't worry.
Yeah. But now I feel bad choosing Porzingis because, you know, your argument made sense. Damn it.
You could still choose Porzingis. He's deserving.
I'm gonna because, you know, you can't argue with what he's doing out there. 18 points a game, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks, almost 2 threes. Will say this, though. I did not expect Porzingis to be this sort of rebounder. I thought he would be better. Mm-hmm. I've been kind of disappointed in his rebounding, and this is the first time I've actually been crapping on my crush, but I wanted to get it out there. Porzingis should definitely, I don't know, go to rebound camp if there's any such thing, because he's in sorely need of it. He's your 7'3" and you're mobile. Like, there's no excuse for not pulling down 10. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. I would really love to see him in an All-Star setting. I think he's done so much, like, get New York interest back. Then James Dolan killed him.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know, he's deserving. I really hope he gets out of New York quick.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we will see him in an All-Star game in the coming years, along with a lot of these other quote-unquote unicorn big men. We mentioned my crush of the week a little bit earlier in the Rookie of the Year race, but it's the homie Dario, who also, may I note, earned a shout out in Zach Lowe's column today as a Dark Horse MVP. But just over his last 6 games, he's averaging almost 20 points, 7 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 2 threes, and a steal in under 28 minutes a game. As I mentioned earlier, he's kind of really pinned Ersan Ilyasova to the bench because he's been playing so well. And there are still long-term questions about how he fits with Simmons and Embiid. You know, can he play the three? Can Simmons play the three? At this point, I don't care because the Sixers are lying about injuries so much that I'm convinced we might never see this full team on the floor at any point. So until they do, at least the homie Dario is cheering me up and, showing why Hinkie traded for him on draft night, why he's worth the number 12 overall pick, et cetera, et cetera. So, worth the wait, both Embiid and homie Dario.
If you keep calling him my homie Dario, I'm going to start thinking that's his name. I'm going to sit there, you know, on Danny's radio or something. I'm going to say, hey, you know what? That guy, my homie Dario, he's balling. Dude, it's not going to work.
You would get so much love from the process crew if there's like a Sportando update that says on Danish radio, they referred to him as my homie Dario. All right. That is going to do it this week for the NBA podcast. Thanks to everyone for listening. Hope you enjoy All-Star Weekend. I'm sorry for all Philadelphia fans that Embiid is not playing. Again, reminder just to check us out on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find all 3 of our Twitter handles in the bio as well. We're also available on iTunes, so we'd love for you to subscribe and download. Leave us some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And FanRag Sports is where we're hosted this year, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and at FanRag NBA. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of great trade deadline content, All-Star Weekend recaps, fun stuff. So check them out on Twitter at FanRagSports.com. As always, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Guys, great talking to you. Enjoy the festivities this weekend.
You too.
Likewise, Brian.
All right, take care, everyone.